You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
In the Octagon, out in San Francisco, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
Do you like not care about your hygiene? Is that what we're hearing here?
I'm actually an obsessive hand washer.
Or maybe the best team in the MLS.
Wait a minute. No, Cashman, that's wrong.
Why?
Because, no, that's absolutely wrong.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMFC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe, back in New York City, just a few hours removed from a very pleasant plane journey. And by pleasant, I mean just suffocatingly hot. It was just a miserable, miserable time. But Sunday was a very good time if you were an MLS fan, guys. I'm still kind of buzzing. Maybe that's just the lack of the sleep and caffeine, but we've talked a lot about the playoffs being a lot of fun, and I don't know, that might have been, maybe I'm not going to say the most fun because you had those wild card games in the first leg, the semis were great too, but it's living up to its billing, huh?
I thought those two games were awesome, and what I liked most about it was I think four really well-coached teams who understand their tactical identities, understand what they want to do and what they don't want to let happen, and just go out there and execute. I thought it was really, really good soccer.
One of the things we said on Thursday is semifinals tend to be the best because you have the quality.
Right.
I mean, these are four teams that could all make the final and win the championship, and no one would have an argument about it. But you have a little bit more confidence to play than a final where you're nervous and you're just trying to work through 90 minutes. And that's exactly what we saw. I mean, like he said, we saw four teams that really – well, I guess they all didn't come out awake, but they came out to play.
There was some sleepiness in Columbus. A lot of people hadn't even found their seats, to be honest with you, at Maffrey Stadium when that ball was going in the back of the net from Justin Mir. And we'll talk all about that game. The New York Red Bulls in a tough position. The Supporters Shield champion New York Red Bulls in a very tough position. We'll talk about that one in the second segment. We're going to start, though, out west in the first segment. We have Alexi Lawless here in a little bit to help guide us through. I didn't get to watch a ton of this game, I'm going to be honest. I was working. I was down in the locker rooms doing my thing after the Eastern Conference side. So I'm going to lean on you guys a little bit. But just from afar, from watching the highlights, from getting back to the hotel in the second half and saying, oh, boy. And see, I saw the Dairon Asprilla goal while we were driving. Will Walsh, our video guy, is sitting next to me watching on his phone and just starts, like, yelling. And I'm like, what? Why? What's going on? What's going on? So this is an exciting game. 3-1 win for Portland, a huge goal laid on from Nat Borchers. That really kind of changes the second leg completely. 2-1, I think Alice is very, very happy. 3-1, a little bit less so. Doyle, your take from this one? Are Portland in pole position? Are we headed to the East for the final, or is there still lots to play for?
Yeah, I'm checking airfare to Columbus for the final, to be totally honest with you.
Doesn't go down, Matt Doyle's house it's going to be the Octagon for sure between him and the Nordic.
Hey, I put out a tweet this morning and said, hey, who's ballsy and is going to tweet their or going to book their flight right now? We'll see.
I was on the verge of it last night because both Columbus and Portland.
Matt. You are out of your mind.
Okay. Well, I mean,
3-1 and 2-0 are not unobtainable obstacles for two teams going
home. Do you
know
the last time an MLS team came back from a two-goal deficit in the first leg?
When was the last time? I don't know.
It was 2004.
Mm-hmm. That was
a good year.
It's
only happened twice ever.
Yeah.
It's not a high percentage. Why is it going to be the Timbers, though? What did they do in this game that showed you that, hey, we've got this thing locked up, 3-1. Dallas do have that away goal. We know they've got some explosiveness up top.
Right. I think they just pose a really tough ask for Dallas because Dallas can't really play without Zach Lloyd in central defense. They can't play at as high a level as they want to because he's so valuable to them in terms of the amount of field he covers and in terms of his ability to scramble defensively. Like, before he started playing central defense, which was like the middle of last year, they were just terrible in emergency defense. He changed that. But they kind of have to play with him, but they kind of have to replace him because they're not good enough defending set pieces without Walker Zimmerman in there. So, and Portland all of a sudden are a really dynamic set piece team. They, over the last 6-8 weeks, they have been just generating tons of chances. So they pose an on-field, off-field restart run of play question for Dallas that I'm not sure they know how to solve. It's tough.
Yeah, there's a lot of question marks there, especially because the radiator just started clanking, which calls into question every point that you just made there.
But the one thing, if you're Dallas, you can look at it one way and say, we give up two goals on set pieces. Clearly, we struggled on corner kicks. Both of them, the service from Darlington Nagby was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. That area right on top of the six where the goalie's not going to come, there's a lot of bodies, so there's an opportunity to battle for it. On the flip side, you say, they're not probably going to score two more goals off set pieces.
And they're not going to score another one like Darren Esprit scored.
Yeah, so exactly. So while Portland, I thought, was dominant at times offensively, they got three goals that one came out of nowhere and two that come off set pieces that I think Dallas can feel like maybe they have an opportunity to score off set pieces as well because Portland can be shaken. We talked about it last
year. I'm not sure about that. This isn't the Dallas of last year or 2 years ago. They only have eight set piece goals all year, and they're not a threat on direct set pieces. As great as Mauro Diaz is, he doesn't put the ball on target enough. So I think this is a huge hole, and I think it's because of that Depp Borchers goal.
Now, of course, a big injury in this one that helped set up the goal for Dallas. That was Liam Ridgewell. It seems like he'll probably be okay for the second leg. But you know what? Let's talk to a guy who was there, a former central defender himself. Fox Sports' Alexi Lawless is on the phone. Alexi, how's it going, man?
It's going, gentlemen, down to the nitty-gritty here with the final score and off to some interesting and at times exciting and scores and results and the way it all happened. But can't wait for leg two.
No, cannot wait for leg two. Before we hit record here with you, you said that this Dallas-Portland game was a little bit strange, and I'm still catching up on things. I need you to explain that to me. I'm not sure I quite understand.
Well, it was strange in that, I mean, this wasn't an epic performance that is going to go down and put in a time capsule in the way that it was played or the excitement. I said beforehand that I thought if Portland was going to have a chance of going through against an FC Dallas, they needed to not only win the game, but win by multiple goals. Ultimately, they ended up doing that. The way in which they went about doing it, I don't think was predictable in that they got two set-piece goals, goals from their center backs, scramble at the end to get that third goal, just an absolute screamer that you don't teach or anything when it comes to the Esprit goal. And at times, I said on the broadcast yesterday, Portland was FC Dallas-ing FC Dallas in their ability to counter with speed, and they looked like the FC Dallas team. Mauro Diaz, I thought, had a quiet night, except he did have one of those patented, beautiful balls to get that maybe what will be a very, very important away goal. And just a strange first leg. Having said that, it sets up a very, very interesting second leg, given how good Dallas is at home, but also how good Portland has been on the road. And the reality that if you told somebody, could you ever envision a FC Dallas winning 2-0 at home against Portland? And there's plenty of people that would say absolutely. And certainly if they do that, given that an away goal, then it's all open, all over, and they're heading off the MLS Cup. But I do think that right now this is Portland's to throw away, and it's not beyond them to do that, but they are going to have to work very, very hard to let this one slip away.
Now, Alexi, something you said just there that I find interesting is that Portland out FC Dallas, FC Dallas, and I was in Columbus, of course, and I thought in a certain aspect that Columbus out Red Bulls the Red Bulls. What was it about these two coaching matchups here? Why do you think these teams maybe flipped the script on their opponent a little bit? Is this what goes into that strategy? Why do you think that happened?
Look, I don't know if it's something that you actually go out there to do, and sometimes just the moment dictates for how teams and individuals to play, but also, you know, when you're talking about these final four teams, and in particular when you're talking about Columbus and New York, they have a certain way of playing and a philosophy, and they don't betray it often. And yet, as you said, in both of these games, there was an element of what has been great about the opposition that sometimes teams took on. And I think it's just an adjustment that at times just needs to be made when you have four teams, and these four teams, absolutely, I think this applies to, that are so close. I mean, if you ask anybody, and look, we're all experts and pundits and all this kind of stuff, we're supposed to have some inside knowledge as to how this is all going to break down. And the reality is that we are guessing as much as anybody else. And yeah, we have some history and stuff like that. But when it comes to MLS, we understand this manufactured parity that exists, it's very hard to call, especially when you get down to these four teams. They are very, very even. And I think it's very difficult to predict, one, who's going to win, and two, how they are ultimately going to win when it comes to the Final Four. And I think you saw some of that in both of these games.
We actually stopped guessing. We have an actual dartboard here, and we just throw it before every week because we can't.
Well, that's
even
what makes this fun, you know. I mean,
Dave's been missing the dartboard a lot.
Yeah, I missed the whole thing. One of the things you mentioned, though, is Mauro Diaz, who, while he had the second assist on the one goal, was a little bit quiet. Now, Diego Valeri is one of the special players in this league, but Jack Jewsbury and Diego Chará did what they were put out there to do. Now, this isn't in abstract. Going into this game, you're up 3-1. Is there a chance that Caleb Porter has to find a way to keep Jack Jewsbury on the field alongside Chará?
Oof, and this is what I know. I'm sure Caleb Porter was very happy about the win over the weekend, but I'm not sure that he's sleeping a lot because he has to make a very difficult and interesting decision as to what he's going to do. Against FC Dallas, as you said, they came with two defensive midfielders, and the times we've seen here in the past where they've been very good playing with one, especially of late when it's Diego Chará in that position. He just looks comfortable. And even last night, the amount of space and the pressure and the balls that he won, I mean, he was absolutely incredible. But like you said, Jack Jewsbury comes in there and gives him the ability also to go forward. Now you've got Diego Valeri. The reason why Jack Jewsbury was put in there, and Porter told us the reason why they played two instead of one in there, was because specifically of the fact that Valeri's not in there. So now he comes back. So do you upset this, especially since the two in front really helped them from a defensive standpoint and really closed down and at times snuffed out that very, very potent attack that Dallas often has individually with guys like Mauro Diaz and just in general with the speed that they have on both sides with Barrios and Castillo. So I don't know what he's going to do ultimately. It worked out very, very well last night, but I don't think you can afford not to have Diego Valeri, because you're going down there with a 3-1 lead, and it's one thing to play defense, but one of the best ways to play defense is to keep the ball away from the other team. And with a guy like Valeri, if you have him on the field, he can not only create opportunities, but he can chew up that clock by creating a rhythm, by creating opportunities, and by causing the other team to worry about him on a consistent basis.
Now, one of the other question marks on the other side for FC Dallas, when we were just talking with Matt Doyle, and he said that maybe Walker Zimmerman brings you more of an aerial presence, especially on set pieces, in defending against Portland, even though Lloyd might be the better defender. Do you think there's even a question mark there, or does Perea stick with it?
Yeah, I don't think that he changes Zach Lloyd out. I mean, the guy's been a mainstay, and as you said, it's so specific to those set pieces because I think that Lloyd is better in the flow of the game. However, when you look at the game that ultimately was decided on two set pieces in terms of both goals coming off of those, it's difficult to – I just don't see him changing that, especially – and it gets back to what we talked about. Look, these are teams that believe in who they are and believe in the players and the philosophy behind them, and they do it almost – not to a fault, because that's a negative connotation. I respect and love the fact that if they're going to go down, they're going to go down standing true to their philosophy and who they are. And I think whether it's Oscar Pereira or Caleb Porter or Greg Berhalter, for that matter, or Jesse Marsh, they believe in what they are doing so much that even if it doesn't work, they are still going to go back to that because it's what's gotten them to there. And I respect people that are willing to do that and don't, at the first sign of a problem, just become pragmatic and change and betray the whole philosophy that they have established and sold to us over the course of a year.
Now, Alexi, I'm with you. I love the fact that we have four coaches, four managers, four teams that have all bought in. But this is not a universal thing in MLS or around the world. This is not This is not always the way it happens. You've built teams in this league. You've done this before. Why? What has to be the special circumstances for this stuff to happen? Why is it so hard? Why don't we see every team try to do this? Why isn't the Colorado Rapids saying, you know what, we're going to go high press and then have it work? What makes these teams so special, this ethos so special?
Well, I mean, a couple of things. Number one, you have to couple it with success because you can have the most incredible philosophy and something that is beautiful in the wording of it, but if you don't back it up with results and people can't see that, then, to be quite honest, there are certain ones that will still be able to see past it, but for the most part, people aren't going to care. The second thing is just because you have a good philosophy, or you believe that it's a good philosophy, you have to be able to articulate it. And I think all four of these coaches and these clubs in general not only support this, whatever they decide on, but they have a good way of articulating, and you're, when I say articulate it, it's just selling it. You are selling people on this is what we are going to do. And you're getting your fans to buy in that says, you know what, at times we are going to get, we are going to have problems because we do this. But you know what, overall, you're going to be able to see the beauty and you're going to be able to see the results. And that's not always appetizing for every season ticket holder or every fan base. But I think these four in particular have found ownership that has given them some leash to go out there and do what they want to do. In the case of, let's say, a Jesse Marsh, he's got a partner in crime, if you will, with Ali Curtis, who understands exactly what he's doing and has bought in as much as I think Jesse Marsh has bought into what Ali Curtis wants out there. So it's about relationships. It's not about having a flawed plan. I've always said I'd rather have someone have a flawed plan than no plan at all. And some of these plans are flawed, but at least there is a plan and understanding and a belief that starts from the top that this is how we are going to be, come hell or high water. And they now are able to couple it with results. So the aesthetic is there, the philosophy is there, the commitment and the loyalty is there, and now they're able to couple with results. And that doesn't always happen. It also doesn't happen necessarily quickly. I know that it's happened very quickly for Jesse Marsh, but he would be this would be an aberration, I think, if you look at it. Sometimes it takes time and a lot of ownership and fan bases don't want to wait around. They don't have that type of patience.
Speaking of things taking time, we've known Darlington Nagbe as a top-level talent from pretty much the moment he started doing his thing at Akron. But it took some time for him to kind of maybe come into his own and really have the confidence that we're seeing from him now. Maybe the positioning, I feel like we're starting to see, at least in a mainstream basis, because God knows the people in Portland and those hardcore MLS fans out there knew this already, maybe the next big star in U.S. soccer. Am I off there? Am I a little too starry-eyed? Or this guy's really starting to change games on a consistent basis, and he might be the next guy to do that at the national team level as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, as American soccer fans, we are constantly in this moment where we start to salivate and we start to dream and hope and extrapolate it out. I think it is legitimate when it comes to Darlington Nagbe for a couple of reasons, not the least of which is that he plays in a specific position and in a specific way that I think is, when it comes to the national team, something that we haven't had and haven't seen. And I also think that's something that, to be quite honest, this team needs. A guy that is in a more attacking central midfield role, that is able to beat multiple players on the dribble, that is able to find that killer pass when he needs it, and is able to have a threat from a speed standpoint, just an all-out speed standpoint. The other thing is, and maybe this is unintended consequences, but if Darlington Nagbe is in that position, it forces Michael Bradley back into a much more deeper lying position on the national team. And I've always said that I think Michael Bradley, as an attacking midfielder, is mediocre. But as a defensive, deep-lying midfielder, I think he is world-class. And so maybe, from my point of view, if Darlington Nagbe is up there, Michael Bradley can do what I believe he does best, and that is lead and control the flow from a deep-lying position, because he won't have to worry about constantly being forced to go forward, which I just don't think is his comfort position. When it comes to why Darlington Nagbe is now playing so well, I asked him the other day, and he immediately said, I'm touching the ball more. He understands that whether it's the national team or whether Portland, he needs to be on the ball. He needs to be in places where he's around the ball, and certainly this central position has helped him more often than not be around the ball. But there's also an element of, and you talk to Caleb Porter, he spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to have this kid live up to his potential. And I'm not sure he's done anything necessarily different from a motivational standpoint. Yes, getting your citizenship, yes, getting your first cap, I think helps. But ultimately, you kind of need to grow as a person, as a player. At some point, you either say, all right, I've been screwing around for too long, and I'm not going to, because I know I can be better. People are telling me I can be better, but the only one that's going to help make me better is ultimately myself. And that doesn't happen for everybody, but I hope that that has happened in Darlington Nagbe's situation. And it is fun to watch, and a lot of that hope and salivation, I hope it comes to something, both for Portland and, for more importantly, in my perspective, from the national team.
Alexi, 20 years ago, you were on the field at the start of this whole MLS experience. Now you're in the broadcast booth for these playoffs. I'm sitting at home watching yesterday the broadcast, the environments, the stadiums, the fans, the players, the quality on the field, the coaches, all of it. It felt like a huge event. It felt like the moment that you wanted to. Do you have any of those moments when you're around the games where it really hits you that you're able to step back and look at where this started and where it's come?
Well, it was interesting because, you know, I've been to Portland so many times now over the years. And last night we had the whole crew in our studio for Fox Sports 1 was on site. And so Rob Stone, who's been around MLS and soccer for as long as I have, but it was his first time being at a Portland Timbers game MLS era, and his first time being in Portland for a soccer game since a qualifier back in must have been 1997 or so when we played Costa Rica there. The stadium was different. The country was different. Everything was different. And to see his face as he went through this game, because he was only doing studio, and then he came up and sat in the booth next to us, and to see him watch Timbers Army, and just to see this, and to see almost a pride and an excitement and a I'm not going to say there was a tear rolling down his cheek, but to see someone like that who's been involved and now to actually be there, and he's seen it on TV and he's talked about it, those are the types of moments for those of us that have been around since the 1900s that are incredibly gratifying. Still got a long way to go on and off the field, but I'll tell you what, if you look at where we were in 1996, compare where we are now, the play on the field, the players, the attention, the culture, the supporters' culture, the facilities, the coaching, the TV, all of that stuff, sometimes we kick ourselves in the ass for what we haven't done. But we got to pat ourselves on the back every once in a while, too. Doesn't mean we stop moving forward. We still, like I said, got a ways to go. But it's a wonderful time to be a soccer fan. It's a wonderful time to be an MLS fan in the United States and in North America. And it's only going to get better.
It's only going to get better. There's another leg in these conference championships. You can catch Alexi next Sunday on the 29th in New York. That's right, Alexi, Red Bull Arena, 7:30 p.m., FS1, TSN.
Absolutely.
Go.
Yep.
All right.
I'm going to hand off the second leg duties in Dallas to my friend Taylor Twelman and the ESPN crew, and then we're going to take over their duties and head over to New York. So we're going to do a little flip-flop. So I will be in New York City this weekend, and then obviously in New Jersey specifically on Sunday for what is, I hope, going to be a wonderful second leg. And Jesse Marsh and his men, they're going to have to score some goals, and it's going to be interesting to see how he goes about doing that against the Columbus crew that really came out, obviously, in the first couple of seconds, but ultimately put together a very good result to take back to New York.
And Alexa, you mentioned New Jersey. I know you played here at Rutgers. I think they suffered a pretty tough loss this weekend. I'm sorry for that.
Last time I checked, it was 6-1. They still haven't let any goals since then, right, over the last 24
hours. I don't think so.
It was not good. It was not good. You
tough.
Know?
Tough stuff.
Oh, Rutgers will rise again.
Rutgers will rise. Alexi Lawless will too. Next Sunday. Alexi, thanks, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
Always glad to have Alexi Lawless with us here on the show. Guys, before we go on to the Eastern Conference Championship first leg, one question for you, and I'll start with you, Doyle. If you're Dallas, how do you approach this one? Do you have to come out swinging? I mean, you need goals, and you need them quick.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Because I think, look, obviously Dallas is better when they can counterattack, and Portland aren't going to push up. They're not going to give Dallas that space in behind to counterattack. I think you just have to make sure that you get the ball onto Mauro Diaz's foot as often as possible and that you give him outlets. And that might mean maybe a little more adventure from Kellen Acosta pushing late out of central midfield with those runs. And it might mean Blas Perez from the start. Because as good as David Teixeira can be, he's just, and I know he had that nice goal, but he's just not a reliable enough presence in front of net.
This is the exact type of game that I could see Blas drawing right. A questionable penalty and mm-hmm. it all being worth it from them. Remember, 2-0 is all it takes here for Dallas. That away goal is massive. Huge, huge, huge. Do you go two central defensive mids,
Dan? For Portland, I think you do. I think you replace with Milano with either Wallace or Valeri. So I don't think you bring both of them back into the team after that performance. And what Alexi said, which I agree with, is you bring Valeri in there. It allows you to hold the ball more.
Yep.
It takes pressure off you. Even if you're not creating goal-scoring chances, you're not constantly defending. Rodney Wallace is a perfect player
sure.
for a game like this, but after the performance of Asprilla, I don't think you can just take him off the field. And you might want to save him as a weapon off the bench, but I think you start Valeri, you keep Nagby where he's comfortable. Jewsbury and Chara have proven in that first leg that they can be effective defensively against that, and everything else, depending on Ridgewell's injury, should stay the same.
Yeah, I would go Wallace in this one just because I think defensively he's a really, really, really big player for them on those flanks. And we know Barrios and Castillo can be very, very dangerous. Tune in on Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern, ESPN and TSN2, the Portland Timbers and FC Dallas playing for a spot in MLS Cup. What do you got?
One little thing. Caleb Porter talked about their maturity, that 2013 wasn't the same. This is going to test his, because if keeping Diego Valeri off the field is what's best for his team to get through, that's a huge decision for a coach to make. And he's a young coach, and he's been through a lot already in his short career. And I think he talked about the team and maturity and how they took a 1-0 lead against RSL 2 years ago, and then they fell 4-1. This is a moment for him now. It'll be interesting to see what he does.
It will be. Stay tuned to MLSsoccer.com for all the coverage. When we come back, the Eastern Conference Championships, a goal after 9 seconds?
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hi, this is Ethan Finley with the Columbus Crew SC, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
But things ain't so bad, because I've got a Galaxy 500.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys. I am Andrew Weeby. With me, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle, and David Goss here
Doyle
in the ETR studios.
Doyle looked so amused by where I chose to come in on that
sound.
Oh,
yeah? I thought he might be like doing some air drums in the background.
I'm just impressed that you guys are aware of Reverend Horton Heat.
Oh. Well, you're impressed. Yeah, you shouldn't be impressed, because I was not, but I liked where that came in, and I had a feeling it was going to get really, really good. It was a little bit slow to start there. That's not the way that Columbus, New York was.
Oh, but
at Matt Priest Stadium.
Wow. That's a pro.
Yep, that's something like
that.
Send
Weeby to one stadium.
Just trying to get us into the soccer talk, boys. You know how it goes. Look, this was a game that I was at. I was fortunate enough to have gotten my nice meatball sub in the press box in time to see Justin Miram score the opening goal just 9 seconds into the match. I mean, let's just start there. It was a 2-0 win for Columbus Crew SC. We've kind of touched it in the lead up, but this game started with a punch in the mouth, and I want to know why. Why were the Red Bulls asleep on this play, Matt? Can you explain this to me?
I think they want to know why, too. I can't explain it. Look, there's a lot of stuff that went wrong right there. I'm not sure that Ronald Zubar needed to actually be challenging for that ball, because there's only one dangerous place that Kai Kamara is going to put it. I think if Damian Parnell is in, he reads that and he drops off and he wins the second ball. But even without that, what is Kamar Lawrence doing? Mm-hmm. Why is he getting beat like a drum by Ethan Finlay for direct north-south pace when you know that's all Ethan Finlay wants to do? It's shocking to look back and watch that. Every time I watch it, it gets worse for the Red Bulls.
We talked a lot about maybe how Columbus might go direct in this game and how they might flip the script a little bit and say, you know what, we've been burned in the past by playing out of the back against the Red Bulls. Let's just go to Kai Kamara. He's the best player in the league in the air, and that's what they did. And it wasn't a surprise, I don't think. Jesse Marsh said afterwards, look, we talked about this. We knew they were probably going to do that.
Dak,
off the kick, that's basically a set piece.
Dak said it as well. Dak said we knew exactly what they were going to do.
Yeah.
And it's funny, you mentioned the comment, the Columbus out-Red-Bulled Red Bull in the first segment. And this was, you know, Red Bulls are the scouting, everything from the coaching standpoint. They focus on every detail,
the minutia,
analytics and the health, all and the fitness, all those things. And this was them being asleep in the first 15 seconds of a game. Just they started and didn't think that the first 10 seconds were going to be that important. And it may be the deciding factor in the series in the end. Now, they responded well.
They did. No, I'll give them that. But look, let's just one final thought on this, because I've been getting hit pretty hard by a couple people on Twitter about Kamar Lawrence, and what they are saying is Kamar Lawrence hate. And I'm going to correct that, because I think Kamar Lawrence is a great player. He killed it at Copa America this summer. He's a huge signing for them at left back, had a great year here in MLS. He takes 5 or 6 steps forward off the opening kickoff, watches Ethan Finlay jet past him, has an opportunity to recover and get there, and he doesn't do it. I think the Red Bulls are lucky, actually, that Matt Miazga didn't get a yellow card on this play, that the ball went in the back of the net, because he absolutely clatters Ethan Finlay. And if he gets that yellow card, there is no Matt Miazga in the second leg. But I think the comment from Dax McCarty that I thought was the most interesting was that he said, Last week I said that it was maybe a good thing that we were naive. It's clearly a bad thing that we were naive. Were they? Is it naivete, Matt, or was this just pure snoozing?
It seemed like a little bit of both, I guess, because you can't call Ronald Zubar naive, right? And he made a boneheaded play there as well. But that triumvirate of Lawrence, Miazga, and Zubar were they struggled all game long, and their inability to link up, to be connected to the midfield, sort of passed those struggles forward. And that kind of undid the Red Bulls. You guys are right that they fought back after that, and they definitely had a couple of looks. I mean, Sasha Kljestan had a look immediately after that one, and they did some good things in the second half, but they never really looked like the Red Bulls. And it's because Kamar Lawrence wasn't able to be connected to the midfield, and it's because Zubar and Miazga weren't able to pick out the right passes. And in fact, Miazga's turnover led to the second goal.
It's also a lot because the Columbus Crew didn't hold a ton of possession. They didn't knock it around the back as much. There was a few moments where New York was trying to play out of the back and the Crew were high pressing and New York was stretched and Miazga played a bad ball from like his own end line. And in my head, I was like, this is the mistake you always make. And then I realized, no, I'm thinking of the Crew. Like,
right.
They completely flipped it. And I actually thought New York from between the 18s played okay. It was in the final third. They kept trying to stand the ball up on the far post when they were 6 yards away from the goal, rather than being more incisive, finding someone's feet, taking shots and opportunities. I thought they were extremely wasteful in good places. Lloyd, Sam, and Grella were at fault for that. Sasha Kljestan was at fault for that. Bradley Wright Phillips almost brought down that one pass from Verone and had a great moment. But I just thought in that final third, they didn't seem to know what they wanted to do. There was goals in this game. If you lose this game 4-2, it's better than losing it 2-0. There was goals there for both teams throughout the game, and New York just couldn't take advantage.
I thought it was interesting in the lead-up, talking to Greg Berhalter. He said, you know, we think maybe New York is going to come out and sit back a little bit. And as the game started to progress, I thought, that seems like he was trying to put something out in the press and maybe confuse some things and play some mind games with that. After the game, Jesse Marsh, I got to be honest with you, I know that he was frustrated. I know he was probably pretty upset about going down 2-0, especially the second goal, and we'll talk about that one in just a second. But he remained pretty positive, and everybody I talked to in the locker room were pretty resolute in that you know, look, we've been the team all year that's proven people wrong, and that's not going to end right now. What can you say about the job that Greg Berhalter did, Matt? But more importantly, what can you say about the job Cedric Mwati did? Because he came in and absolutely changed this match with that little run at the end.
Well, he did, and look, Mwati's in a good spot to do damage because he comes into these games after Finlay has been making these really hard, really direct runs for 75, 80 minutes, and he's going at tired defenders every time he comes in. And it seems like every time he comes in now, he's taking advantage of it. It's been a really good 1-2 punch on that right side for Columbus. But just holistically, I thought what Greg Berhalter, because we talk about soccer as a game of matchups, as this guy against that guy. It's really all 11 guys on the field versus the other 11 guys on the field. And I thought holistically what Berhalter did in terms of reining in Waylon Francis a little bit and having him support instead of full on overlap, and having Justin Miram spend time maybe a little further wide to spread the Red Bulls out and to make it tougher for them to actually get into their pressure, and then to isolate Dax McCarty. I thought it was just a really well thought out game plan. And McCarty had his worst game of the season easily, completed 65% of his passes. This is a guy who completes 85% regularly and makes them telling. And this game, he had nothing to offer because the Red Bulls were so disjointed. And it's what the Crew did.
And it's interesting. This what you're getting from Mbwata is exactly what the Red Bulls wish they were getting from Verone. A guy who comes in, maybe isn't ready to star this year, will in the future, with speed and take advantage of tired defenders. And Verone really isn't giving it to them. And Mbwata comes in. I thought it was interesting this game he came in for Finley. Justin Miram played much better than Finley did in this game. A lot of times Miram's the one who comes off.
And Justin Miram, don't forget,
right,
27 hours one way to Taiwan, 27 hours back over the international break, and he didn't play.
Yeah,
he just traveled. He just took a trip over the course of basically 2.5 days, and he was able to do this. It's a really impressive thing.
I think he has the higher ceiling – than Finley, but he's much less consistent. Ethan Finley's a phenomenal player. That's not taking it away from
They're just such different players.
Right.
You know, Miram is the guy you want on the ball, and Finley is the guy that you want stretching out the defense and making the game big and fast. And it's a credit to Berhalter that he has two such disparate parts, and he's figured out the correct system fit for both of them. And that's something that goes unmentioned, I think, when it comes to development of players. So often it's, what team are you landing with? Does the coach understand how to use you? And I mean, both these guys have done really, really well, but throughout the course of the season, but this game was just, it was a masterpiece from Berhalter.
Yeah. And I think that's where the full credit goes. We love that these coaches have philosophies and they're able to find players, give them confidence, bring them in, play attractive styles, but you do want to see the maturity to understand the moment. Mm-hmm. To understand what your team needs, and that's what Greg Berhalter did in this game.
In reference to those two outside parts, I read a piece in the Seattle Times today from our friend Matt Pence, an interview with Siggy Schmidt, in which Siggy says, look, I think a lot of people think that the soccer needs to be symmetrical, and it absolutely doesn't. There can be mismatched parts. There can be one side that has that north-south game and one side that plays a little more horizontally, and I think Greg Berhalter in this system, in this year, has really found a way to take advantage of that. Remember, Justin Miram was a guy that really didn't play his first couple years in the league. Ethan Finley was a guy who didn't play. It's not like Berhalter went out and grabbed these guys and, you know, from the transfer in a transfer window and said, oh, target these guys. That's who he developed them, and he put them in a position to be successful. And I think that's one of those things that in these playoffs you get really excited about, because all four of those coaches have managed to do that with existing parts. And in MLS, we've talked about this a lot. You have to do that. I want to talk a little bit about another guy, not another guy, but a couple of guys, let's be honest here, going on the Mwati track that came into Columbus this year. We talked about it on the two shows ago. I wasn't here last show. Yeah, two shows ago. That summer window from the Crew was huge.
And Harrison,
Harrison Awful. I mean, come on. This game, it was an and-one mixtape at right back for this guy. He's out of contract after this year. He wants to stay, he says. I think you can make a good argument that he's the best right back in the league, and I think you can make an argument that he's an absolute game changer for this team with the way they play.
I agree that he's a game changer for them, and you saw what Grana did on this team, and then they lost it. So you knew that
through none of their own fault,
right.
Just circumstance.
Through no one's fault. Right. That's just the way the world. Right. That's just the way life is sometimes. But you knew that if you could get a player like that across from Waylon Francis, that they could be dangerous. And Harrison Awful has done that. He has struggled defending at times. Yeah. He has not. I guess no one's perfect. So. And it's his first year in, so I think he would be better next year after being settled in the league. But I agree with you that, and Matt said it, Waylon Francis didn't have to push forward. He played a little bit more conservative. It allowed Awful to push. And in the next game, they could swap that. New York could prepare for it, and they could swap that because both players are capable of playing both ways.
Now, Pipa Higuain opened up in this game, and there's been some people that have not been complimentary of him leading into it. Matt, I thought that he's the guy. We haven't talked about him yet, and I didn't hear a ton of people talking about him yesterday. He maybe is the key for this team. He pops up everywhere, and Rebels just didn't have an answer for him when Crew came forward. He was in good spots. He created things. He had great moments on the ball. He was the pass before the pass all night, I thought.
Yeah, he covers more ground, I think, than any other number 10 in the league. He's just impossible to track, and he sees the game at such a high level. The complaint about Higuain is sometimes his touch deserts him. You know, he'll see a pass, but he won't always. He has a tendency to underhit and overhit. He doesn't weight a ball as beautifully as like a Mauro Diaz does. But his ability to control the game with his brain is phenomenal. And you know, he's another one who was there before Greg Berhalter was there. In fact, Will Trapp and Tony Chani were there before Greg Berhalter was there. The entire five-man midfield in Columbus, they just played a different way. They played a 4-4-1-1 with Higuain as an underneath forward. Now what they played the other day was a 4-3-3, you know, and they've played a 4-2-3-1 and a 4-1-4-1. Their ability to mix and match those parts and still keep their triangles, still keep the geometry of everything effective is really impressive. And yeah, leg one, New York had no answer.
I want everyone out there to know those weren't formations. That's actually the lotto numbers this year, this week. So if you pick those exact numbers, you're almost guaranteed to
I'm
win.
I'm throwing it at the dark board. We didn't hear. Look, there was no clanking from the radiator. So that's the truth. That's the pure truth.
A small stat, though, for New York in terms of bouncing back this year, 6-2 after losses, outscoring their opponents 20-7. So it hasn't been playoff games, but they have bounced back when they have lost games. They're going to be at home. The crowd's going to be loud. They're going to be excited.
It's going to be a sellout.
If they can get a one-goal lead, or excuse me, if they can go up 1-0, even going into halftime, I think that they could feel okay because you'll have the energy behind you. You got to think the Crew will start to get a little bit nervous at times. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you're going to have to score goals to go to the Cup anyway. So whether it's 2 or 1, but if they give up an away goal,
if they give up an away goal, that's the key there. They have to win.
Four, yeah.
You win 2-0, you go to extra time and perhaps PKs. You win 3-1, and it all of a sudden it doesn't matter anymore. Yeah. Now they have to stop them somehow. I think that's the biggest challenge here. I think goals can come for New York. They have that ability, but stopping them, that's the difference. Matt Miazga's had a lot of shine on him lately, Dave. He's an awful lot of shine with the U.S. national team. We've talked a lot about it. He's been a very good player this year. This was one of those little hiccups, from a young player.
Well, I think part of it is playing next to Zubar and it being different. Zubar's a little bit more chaotic next to him, and so it's not as steady, not as confident. And then I think a lot of what was happening in front of him was stuff that he's not used to because of the way Columbus played and the way New York, Matt talked about it, their midfield wasn't connected like it has been almost all season. I mean, they haven't had a lot of bad games. Even when they've lost, they haven't had a lot of bad games. And so I think all of that going on around a young player who's not the dominating presence in the middle because he's the youngest guy on the field makes it really tough. And there were a lot of moments I thought he could have gotten a yellow card in this game. Yep. There was the moment where he pushed
Miram
off the ball.
Yeah, Miram, that was smart for Miram. That's a little veteran play. He was trying to sucker him, man. I thought you could see Miazga, like the blood start to boil. And I was like, oh, dude, don't do it. Don't do it.
It was insane. So there was moments, and I thought – at times he deserved one, but he didn't get one, so he's still on the field for them. They could not have lost him.
Nope.
It would have been a train wreck.
But they got to figure out Miazga. I mean, it's going to be a good test this week to see how well he can think the game, because they've got to figure out how to prevent Kai Kamara from getting so many touches deep in that box. I think he ended up with 5 shots on goal, and he was setting guys up as well.
And the goal? Kamara's goal, Zubar and Miazga do not react.
Out to lunch.
Yeah, and Boateng comes through the box. That's a whole nother conversation. Takes the shot, Robles parries it, and Kai Kamara is even with Zubar and Miazga, and neither of them move.
Well, you see in the whole play, actually, if you go back and watch that play as Boateng starts to approach the box, I don't think either of them move more than 2 or 3 steps from their spot. It's almost stationary in that sense. It really did fall asleep.
But why is Verón diving in?
Yeah, he basically slide tackled Dax McCarty.
He slide tackled into his own player. And one of the quotes, it may have been Robles or someone on the Crew bench, said, "Oh well, we look tired." Why is Verón looking tired on that play? He just came off the bench.
Yeah, it was Robles who said they looked tired. I mean, Dax addressed the play. He said, he said, "Look, it got chaotic out of nowhere. You know, that's what happens. Two guys don't know who's going to make the tackle there, and you get in a bad place." And Felipe got beat for maybe the first time all night. I thought he was very, very good defensively. You think back to a lot of huge plays, huge tackles that he made for the Red Bulls. But in the end, it doesn't matter. A 2-0 loss for them. 1-0, I think they would have felt pretty good.
Yeah.
1-0, you walk away saying, "Hey, we gave up one at the beginning. We really fell asleep on that, but we got everything to play for at Red Bull Arena."
Well, it was both these games. I mean, if Dallas walks away 2-1 and New York walks away 1-0, I think those are games where both teams could be happy with what they got. But in the last 5 minutes or stoppage time,
moments of focus too, not necessarily like moments of brilliance for the other team, moments of focus. Matt, before we get out of here and go to the mailbag, we got some Chicago Fire coaching potential news, I should say, to discuss. How do the Red Bulls get back into this one? How do they play? What's Jesse Marsh's game plan in leg two?
Oh, man. I do think they have to continue to be who they are. I think they have to continue with that high pressure. And look, they did force a couple of turnovers. I think Michael Parker's had a bad early one. The other thing is Bradley Wright Phillips has scored a goal in the home leg of literally every playoff series he's played in for the Red Bulls. He has proved to be a clutch performer in the playoffs. They've got to get him more touches around the box, and he's got to be willing to shoot. He was a little hesitant in this one. Nothing nothing too over the top, nothing too out of the realm of normal for them. Just got to be who they are.
The reality of it is you take away those first 10 seconds, I think the first 15 minutes of that game is kind of what they want.
Yeah,
They were creating opportunities. They were in the box. The ball was moving pretty quickly from side to side. Lloyd Sam had a couple 1v1 opportunities. Sasha Kleshchen's getting into the box. I think that's what it is. First 15 minutes, you got to come out with your hair on fire.
And then they started settling for crosses. They crossed the ball 35 times. Way too many.
And it made no sense. It wasn't them, and that's the part that was confusing. It wasn't the Crew taking them out of their game. It was them taking themselves out.
If you're the Crew, do you go direct? Do you stick with that? Do you say, hey, we got a 2-0 lead? We're not going to give you any freebies back in the back.
Absolutely. And you also have players that can break one-on-one, right? You have players in Miram who can come underneath. Kai, if he gets opportunities, is going to outrun both those center backs for New York. Pipa, we saw what he could do on the ball. So I think for Columbus, you don't want to sit back at all because that's not your game. But I think you just stick to what worked for you.
Two big games on Sunday, the 29th. It starts on ESPN and TSN2 with the Portland Timbers and FC Dallas in Dallas. The Timbers with a 3-1 advantage after that first leg. And then 7:30 p.m., FS1, TSN Go, Columbus Crew, New York Red Bulls from Red Bull Arena. Make sure you catch those. Give us your thoughts. We're actually going to record on Wednesday ahead of those games. So if you have some thoughts there, let us know. I also have a bunch of Columbus Crew swag that I'd like to give out that I brought back with me from the beautiful Central Ohio City. So good stuff.
Yeah, no idea where you were going on
that.
Yeah,
good stuff. Give me some stories. Give me something and entertain us. Make us laugh. We'll give it to you. At Extra Time Radio, extratime@mlssoccer.com. When we come back, maybe some coaching news in the Windy City.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
That you can keep a smile on my face. But if you ever tell me goodbye.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. With the guys, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle, Dave Goss, I am Andrew Weaver. We're into the mailbag. And before we talk about this new rumor in the Chicago Fire coaching search, I just want to say props to the MLS supporters out there because I saw a flag, or not a flag, I saw a banner in Portland that said refugees welcome. Love the message from the Timbers Army. You can also read a really interesting story on MLSsoccer.com. We talked to Kai Kamara, Justin Miram, two guys who have some pretty intimate experience with this sort of thing about what they think about current events right now. It's an interesting perspective I think you should go check out. I also was really proud to see some French flags in the stands at Matt Free Stadium. That was a special moment, I thought, here in the MLS Cup playoffs. A team that's not in the playoffs, Chicago Fire, as I said, they're looking for a coach. Todd Ramos rumored to be in the running. Also rumors saying, nah, his price tag's a little bit too high. And now, Doyle, there's another guy that just about everybody that listens to this show should know linked with the job.
Yeah, Pavel Pardo. It looks like it was broken first in the Mexican press. Then Eric Winalda confirmed it. And I believe the guys at Fire Confidential confirmed as well that he is a target. And he makes a lot of sense because, first of all, just his presence as a human being. I haven't met him, but everybody I've talked to is like, this is a guy, when he speaks, he's measured, he's intelligent, he's a communicator and a leader. Our former Fire beat writer, Sam Stashkel, now an editor for us, he was very impressed by the guy, and that is in line with everything that we know about him. And also because, look, the Fire want to sign a Mexican international this winter. I think it'll be Carlos Vela if they can get his rights from Colorado. And Pardo still has a ton of clout and a ton of rep in that part of the world. So he'd make sense. And, of course, he's a former Fire player as well. So he kind of checks a lot of boxes.
Indeed, he does. Dave, I think when you look at him, you wonder, hey, he's a young guy. Can he coach? If he gets hired, we'll have to find that out. But his resume is pretty much spotless when it comes to North American players. I mean, 148 caps for Mexico speaks for itself. But he wasn't a guy that stuck around Liga MX forever. He went to Germany, had a great career there with Stuttgart. He played for the Fire. He knows this league to a certain extent. Is Nelson Rodriguez, if he gets hired as his GM, who is as familiar with MLS as just about anybody out there? It looks like it could be a good move for these guys.
Yeah, he'll be a first-time coach, so they'll be issues, but he was a cerebral player. He was the guy who was the player coach on the field. He, like you said, was a mainstay for Mexico through a lot of big games, big moments. He can connect with the young Latin players that they have coming up through their academy that could potentially be game changers.
I mean,
for them.
Any players. I mean, you look at Pablo Pardo. If you're a young player who wants to go pro, what he says better hold some weight.
And he had a great relationship with fans and the fans in that city specifically. He knows the league, so it could be very interesting. Can I just be naive, though, for 1 second and ask, why do the Colorado Rapids have Carlos Vela's rights?
I believe they have the discovery claim on him. That's been reported.
The old discovery claim.
That.
Gotta have that.
That is MLS right
there.
There
you go. That is some vintage MLS. But Pavel Pardo in the running. Maybe Todd Ramos. We're not sure. Chicago Fire fans, remember, I'm looking at a box of like authentic jerseys, of scarves, of all this cool Fire gear. I want to know what you think about this stuff. I want to get your thoughts. I want to give this stuff away and make Dave head over to the other side of the street and put it in the mail.
Woo.
So give us your thoughts at Extra Time Radio, extratimeatmlssoccer.com. We will be back around on Wednesday. Remember, we'll release that one a little bit early so you have something to listen to in the car, in the plane, wherever it is you go to Thanksgiving.
If you want to dip out from Thanksgiving dinner and listen in a back room while you relax. Mm-hmm.
Forget Adele. Just go Extra Time Radio.
Wow.
Yeah, we will be back.
Is that your Thanksgiving?
That is. We will be back midweek. We'll see you then.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.